The Hoffman Process, A Path to Personal Freedom and Love by Bob Hoffman. Introduction. In the depths of their being, everyone understands that love is the essence of a fulfilling life. This message appears consistently in all of the world's religious traditions. So why, I asked myself, is there so much discord and negativity in human relations? There had to be something missing in our everyday understanding about love and emotions and our actions and relationships that grew out of this misunderstanding. Feelings of love and affection have enormous power in every aspect of our lives, shaping and coloring our behaviors, and at times spinning them out of control. My work led me to uncover a very basic misunderstanding about emotional love. And in the discovery, I also found a path to recovering our innate ability to love and becoming fully integrated adults. For many years, I worked by myself as a spiritual intuitive with a small number of people who came to me for healing. Through contact with psychotherapists, I learned that, while an enormous amount of work had been done describing the emotional effects of parental conditioning, very little had been done to understand the motivation of children in emulating the counterproductive and limiting behaviors of their parents. I had an intuition that this was what lay at the root of the unhappiness of those who sought me out. A more complete understanding came to me in 1967, whereupon I formulated the models and concepts that are the foundation of the Hoffman Process. This booklet represents my particular insights into the workings of the human mind, which might seem familiar as I describe them. I coined the word quadrinity to represent the four aspects of a human being: the emotional, intellectual, physical, and spiritual. The unique capacities and functions of each aspect can be considered separately, but it is the balance of all aspects working together harmoniously that fulfills us as human beings. It has been my experience that most people do not live in this harmonious balance. Certainly, those of us raised in Western culture give primary authority to the intellect, both our own and those of the authorities selected by our history, religions, or scientific worldview. To create balance, the other three aspects of ourselves need to come into partnership with the intellect. As Albert Einstein once said, quote, "We should take care not to make the intellect our God. It has, of course, powerful muscles, but no personality. It cannot lead. It can only serve." Unquote. While we recognize that we have a physical body, and many acknowledge that we are spiritual beings, we generally downplay or even disregard any positive role for our adult emotional aspect of self. Even with all our training and education, we still tend to either neglect our emotions or cope with them by abusing substances or behaving inappropriately. Most often as adults, we merely tolerate the infantile and pitiable existence of our emotions. This predicament is the basis of what I've identified as the negative love syndrome. I saw that people really began to understand themselves in a new way once they recognized how the negative love syndrome was active in their lives, along with its causes, feelings, attitudes, and behaviors that are, for the most part, just beneath our conscious day-to-day experience. I therefore invite you to relate to the ideas presented here in a personal way as the child of your own parents. As you are introduced to the following information and do the exercises I've included, allow yourself to experience the emotions that arise as fully as you can. This will be the beginning of understanding, in an experiential way, your own emotional and spiritual truth. Although we will be investigating the source of your negative emotional programming, this essay is not an indictment of your parents or you. What follows here may trigger and evoke early memories, including some you may have forgotten. It is intended to give you a taste of the personal freedom that is possible. At the very least, I hope that you find a deeper understanding about yourself and your parents. You may even have discovered something astonishing about yourself by the time you read through to the end. Four aspects of self, the quadrinity. To help understand the great complexity of the self, its development, and the problems resulting from the adoption of the negative love syndrome, I use the quadrinity as a framework. It is a simple yet powerful model for understanding ourselves and our behavior that includes all four aspects of self: body, emotions, intellect, and spiritual self. The quadrinity is our whole, integrated, balanced self embodying all four aspects. These four aspects are, of course, interrelated and form a complex interactive system. I use three distinct combinations of aspects of the self: the duality, the trinity, and the quadrinity. The duality consists of the emotional self and the intellectual self. They can be combined as one entity or be visualized separately. I refer to the three aspects of our minds as the trinity: the emotional self, the intellectual self, and the spiritual self. Again, they can be visualized as one entity or separately. Physical self. The body, which includes the brain, is the physical dwelling place for the mental aspects of the self. Through the body, we act out and manifest the thoughts of the intellect, the feelings of the emotional self, and the essence of the spiritual self. The following are qualities of the physical self: experiences the world through our senses, communicates with others through voice and gestures, connected with the mind via neurological and biochemical feedback, carrier of genetic information, repository for the memories of all experiences, manifests physical symptoms of unresolved mental conflicts, for example, pains of stress, acts out emotional and intellectual behaviors, both positive and negative, and can express the spiritual self. Emotional self. The emotional self contains feelings expressed through the physical body. It is where negative patterns first show up developmentally, and along with the intellect, where these patterns reside. The negative emotional self is defined as childish. It has no sense of time or space. It regresses readily. Positive characteristics of the emotional self: curious, playful, joyful, creative, spontaneous, adventurous, feels grief. Negative patterns of the emotional self: rebellious, ashamed, anxious, defensive, rigid, fearful, depressed. Intellectual self. The intellectual self, our logical and problem-solving thought processor, includes what and how we think, our worldviews, values, and beliefs. Along with the emotional self, the intellect is where patterns reside. Shoulds, shouldn'ts, do's, don'ts, can'ts are in the intellect and can be either positive or negative. They are negative when they are compulsive. Positive characteristics of the intellectual self: rational, understanding, knowledgeable, creative, logical, analytical, discerning. Negative patterns of the intellectual self: critical, over-rational, judgmental, defensive, argumentative, making excuses, controlling. Spiritual self. The spiritual self is the pure, non-programmed, non-mediated aspect of self that is a positive, pure, open presence, yearning to embody our larger, true nature in this world. It is our essence, our strong, clear sense of self that is untouched under all our negative experiences, memories, and actions. Intuitive, responsive, unconditioned, and connected. Wise, growing, moving towards wholeness. Intentional, courageous, all-loving, compassionate, and forgiving. Peaceful, grounded, and centered. Aspires to goodness, truth, and justice. Mediator, integrator, moral, and completely ethical. For thousands of years, human beings have attempted to understand and come to terms with the mystery of life and of creation itself. One enduring notion maintains that the source of everything is a non-physical, intelligent, loving spirit or being, and that we are connected to that spirit. Aldous Huxley called this the perennial philosophy. Though the exact manner in which people have experienced this higher intelligence varies from age to age and culture to culture, the belief in its existence persists. Ken Wilber described the perennial philosophy in the following way, quote, "Reality, according to the perennial philosophy, is not one-dimensional. It is not a flat land of uniform substance stretching monotonously before the eye. Rather, reality consists of different grades or levels. At one end of this continuum of being, or spectrum of consciousness, is what we in the West would call matter. And at the other end is spirit, or the superconscious." Unquote. Human beings have always searched for ways to connect and to have communion with this presence. They have used many names to describe this experience. Some call it God. Some call it the infinite. Many describe experience of it as ecstasy, joy, clarity, bliss, inner peace, wholeness, and love. Even a moment of such an experience can be life-transforming. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, quote, "Our faith comes in moments. Our vice is habitual. Yet there is a depth in those moments which constrains us to ascribe more reality to them than to all other experiences. I am constrained every moment to acknowledge a higher origin than the will I call mine." Unquote. The light. The experience is often reported as being in a powerful, brilliant, though not blinding, pure light where fear of death is eased. Much has been written about those who, near death, recall emerging from darkness into a magnificent, loving light with peace and love awaiting them. Many people have searched for ways to connect and have communion with this light through various forms of spiritual practice. In 1976, I came to understand that because we are of this light, we should be able to communicate and make contact with it directly and at will without intermediaries. To facilitate this, I developed the Light Journey Visualization, through which anyone can enter the light of peace and compassion. This experience has proven to be deeply moving. If desired, virtually anyone can experience being in the light and their spiritual self as being of the light. Visualizations can give us access to the underlying truths of our quadrinity. Ordinarily, we are as unaware of the light as we are unaware of the sources of our negative emotions. In the Hoffman process, we use guided visualizations, guided imagination, to make conscious contact with our unconscious mental processes in order to gain access to our true feelings. We can then discover both our non-conditioned self and our conditioned self. As we begin to experience our spiritual self, we recognize our fundamental goodness and begin the journey toward integration and balance. Negative love syndrome. Negative love is intergenerational pain that is passed down from one generation to the next. Everyone is guilty and no one is to blame. We all have negative moods, attitudes, and behaviors that come from a very deep emotional place. Created by childhood programming, we act out these negativities every day over and over again. The pain, the feeling of being unlovable, and the conflict caused by these negative attitudes, feelings, and behaviors result in personal suffering and social injustices that affect each of us every day. Among mammals, humans require the longest period of care and nurture until they achieve independence. In our early years, our survival depends on intensive and continuing physical and emotional parental care. So as a result, children need to feel that they will not be abandoned and that they are loved and valued by their parents or parental figures. In fact, as newborn babies, love and affection were as vital to us as food and shelter. In order to thrive, we needed a continuous flow of unconditional love from mother and father. We are born with these needs that must be satisfied by our parental relationships. The British psychoanalyt John Bowlby in the 1950s developed what he called attachment theory, which is discussed in the remarkable book, A General Theory of Love. The authors, Lewis, Amini, and Lannan, explain, quote, Bowlby theorized that human infants are born with a brain system that promotes safety by establishing an instinctive behavioral bond with their mothers. That bond produces distress when a mother is absent, as well as the drive for the two to seek each other out when the child is frightened or in pain. Mothers shape their children in long-lasting and measurable ways, bestowing upon them some of the emotional attributes they will possess and rely on, to their benefit or detriment, for the rest of their lives. Unquote. In every situation that we, as children, experienced our parents' love being cut off, that is, through depression, anger, abandonment, death, or their love becoming conditional, the parental bond was broken for us. We felt unlovable, as if a part of us had suffocated and died. The basic cause of our inability to relate to ourselves and to others with love is this very state of feeling unlovable, which I call negative love. To understand how this feeling of unlovability leads to negative programming, we have to see the world through the eyes of a child, the child we once were, before we had any choice or options, before we had a mediating intellect. John Bradshaw explains why babies need unconditional love in the following way. Quote, children are egocentric. This does not mean that they are selfish in the usual meaning of the word. They are not morally selfish. They are not even capable of moral thinking until about 7 or 8, the so-called age of reason. Even at that age, their thinking still has definite egocentric elements in it. Egocentric thinking means that a child will take everything personally. The impact of not having one's parents' time creates the feeling of being worthless. The child is worth less than his parents' time, attention, or direction. The young child's egocentricity always interprets events egocentrically. If mom and dad are not present, it's because of me. there must be something wrong with me, or they would want to be with me. Children are egocentric because they have not had time to develop ego boundaries. An ego boundary is an internal strength by which a person guards her inner space. Without boundaries, a person has no protection. A strong boundary is like a door with the doorknob on the inside. A weak ego boundary is like a door with a doorknob on the outside. A child's ego is like a house without any doors. Children are egocentric by nature, not by choice. Their egocentricity is like a temporary door and doorknob, in use until strong, healthy boundaries can be built. Strong boundaries result from the identification with parents who themselves have strong boundaries and who teach their children by modeling. Children have no experience. They need their parents' experience. By identifying with their parent, they have someone on whom they can depend outside of themselves. As they internalize their parent, they form a dependable guide inside themselves. If the parent is not dependable, they will not develop this inner resource. Children need mirroring and echoing. These come from their primary caretaker's eyes. Mirroring means that someone is there for them and reflects who they really are at any given moment of time. In the first 3 years of our life, each of us needed to be admired and taken seriously. We needed to be accepted for the very one we are. Unquote. As we look to have our need for love met exclusively within the family, parental abandonment or rejection literally raised the fear of death for the helpless, dependent child. So as children, we emotionally emulated, that is, adopted and internalized, our parents' negativities in order to guarantee the continuing protection against abandonment or rejection by our parents. Children cannot recognize or acknowledge the inadequacies and faults of their parents, because that recognition would evoke unbearable anxiety. The well-known psychiatrist Karen Horney identified this feeling of childhood insecurity as basic anxiety. Quote, "A wide range of adverse factors in the child's environment can produce this insecurity in a child. Direct or indirect domination, intolerance, erratic behavior, lack of respect for the child's needs, lack of guidance, disparaging attitudes, too much admiration or the absence of it, lack of reliable warmth, having to take sides in parental disagreements, too much or too little responsibility, overprotection, isolation from other children, injustice, discrimination, unkept promises, hostile atmosphere, etc." Unquote. Along with the feeling of insecurity is the sense many parents have that mistreatment is good for children. Alice Miller in For Your Own Good has observed, quote, "We were not even allowed to be aware that all this was happening to us, for any mistreatment was held up to us as being necessary for our own good." Even the most clever child cannot see through such a lie if it comes from his beloved parents, who, after all, show him other sides as well. He has to believe that the way he is being treated is truly right and good for him, and that he will not hold it against his parents. Our early experience with our parents has a profound effect on our lives, shaping our self-image, attitudes, moods, and behavior. We develop our survival strategies and life orientations as a result of our conditioning. Not only are we unable to recognize or acknowledge our parents' faults and their abuse of us, we imitate their faults and inadequacies, attitudes, moods, and behaviors in order to be accepted by them. More than merely role models, parents are everything to little children, looming so large as to be godlike. As children, we identified with our parents, absolutely. But parents are only human, with negative behavioral patterns as well as positive ones. How often have you thought or said, "I sound just like my father. My goodness, I'm becoming just like my mother. My God, why am I doing this? My mother and her father used to do that. I hated it when she did it, and now I'm doing it." Of course, we are not our parents, but what then drives the powerful unconscious compulsion to be like them? It is the primitive but innocent attempt to end the sense of separation from them that we experienced as children when they were being negative. This occurred unconsciously. Knowing no better, we adopted their patterns as our own. We wanted to be like them so we could earn their acceptance and love. The negative love syndrome is the adoption of the negative behaviors, moods, attitudes, and admonitions, overt and silent, of our parents to secure their love. It includes the subsequent compulsive acting out or rebellion against those negative traits throughout our adult lives. In an essay about the Hoffman process, psychiatrist and noted author Claudio Naranjo wrote, quote, "Hoffman's idea that the child adopts parental traits in order to be loved both acknowledges the love need as the basic source of identification and implies an assumption in the child's mind that by being like his parents, he would obtain the love that he is not experiencing by merely being himself," unquote. Later in our adult lives, we continue to compulsively act out negative patterns from our childhood in an ongoing attempt to be loved, even though we know that there are alternatives to our negativities, and even though we recognize on some level that these behaviors cannot bring us happiness, we continue to act them out. Negative love patterns, though unconsciously motivated by our deep need for love, produce alienation and/or rejection. Then when our negative behaviors don't produce the love we want and need, we blame others and become vindictive. In effect, we want revenge for not being loved and accepted, and thus we become even more hurtful toward ourselves and others. This leads to remorse, guilt, and shame, which reinforce the belief that we are essentially flawed. In due time, our own children adopt our patterns in order to secure our love, and the negative love syndrome passes on to the next generation. In living out these adopted negativities, we obscure our innate and true loving essence, just as our parents did. For transformation to take place, we must first become aware of the negative aspects of our lives. Only then does a way out become possible. The key is in the awareness that we adopted our parents' negative traits. Anything adopted can also be released. The Hoffman process teaches us how to release and resolve the persistent negative feelings of being unloved and unlovable. The way out is a daunting task. We must somehow transcend our parents' negative traits without feeling inner conflict. To achieve this, we must have the courage for honest self-examination and accept that challenge wholeheartedly. We will return to the transcendence of the negative love syndrome after we have further considered the mechanisms by which we adopted the negative love patterns. Adoption of and rebellion against negative love patterns. The adoption of our mother's and father's patterns of feeling and behaving begins in mother's womb and accelerates after birth. The negative programming continues until puberty, by which time we've adopted or rebelled against virtually all of our parents' and surrogate parents' behaviors, moods, and attitudes. We then carry them into adulthood as our own. There are two basic ways we take on negative patterns, behaviors, moods, and admonitions. Adoption. We unconsciously adopt our parents' negative traits and mirror them back to be like them so they will love us. For example, when adopting the negative trait of being critical, we become self-critical, critical of others, and/or set it up for others to be critical of us. Rebellion. We unconsciously adopt our parents' negative traits, but we dislike the traits and their consequences. So, we suppress overtly those traits we dislike and our feelings about them, and in an attempt to be more like our parents, we learn to act out compensatory behaviors. This provides the illusion of freedom and self-development. To continue our example, imagine you adopted the trait of being critical, but at some point attempt to be non-judgmental and accepting. Then at some point you meet a critical person. Your first reaction, from a self-righteous moral standpoint, may be to criticize that person for their actions and behavior. Thus, we find ourselves back in the original pattern. Acting out the alternative does not quiet the negative voice within us. Instead, we are pulled in two opposing directions. We get two patterns instead of one. On some occasions, we act out the adoptive behavior, and at other times, the alternative behavior. This seesawing creates even greater anxiety and conflict. To be loyal to each parent, we must play both roles, adopting each of their traits. This produces conflict, especially if your parents are very different from each other. For example, suppose your mother was quiet and placating. She never expressed anger. Father, on the other hand, was hostile and aggressive. Outwardly, you may behave like your mother, but the suppression of Dad's hostility is like a latent volcano rumbling inside, waiting for the appropriate moment to erupt. Moreover, you might recreate Mother's situation of being incompetent at dealing with anger by having angry people around you. Any adoption of negative traits inevitably brings internal conflict. This is clearly demonstrated in extreme examples. People with abusive parents can often find themselves in abusive relationships. It has the pull of something familiar. But then there is also the unconscious hope that this time it will be different. This time I will change the situation and get the love I didn't receive as a child. It is a way of trying to heal an old wound. However, while these old emotions are looking for love, the reality created is actually a misery of living through more abuse in the present. This is an inner conflict, a drive toward peace and lovability not felt in childhood that actually creates the opposite. This conflict can turn into a vicious cycle. In an attempt to resolve a situation and the underlying belief of unlovability, we act out an adopted parental pattern. When this fails, it leads us to acting out another set of behaviors or beliefs to compensate or correct for the previous ones. And this continues with more negative patterns, and each trip around this cycle of patterns takes us even further from our goals and reaffirms our unlovability. We can become very trapped as we move through the circle of ever more negative beliefs and actions. The conflict of negative love. Our compulsive behaviors set us up to be rejected and unloved by the very people whose acceptance and love we most desire. If we win, we lose. This is the inevitable result of the negative love syndrome. The negative love syndrome has a stranglehold on us. It cuts off our ability to love freely. And as adults, we pay dearly for our negative identification with our parents. In effect, we sell our souls. For example, In our relationships, we unconsciously try to recapture mommy or daddy's love, choosing partners who manifest traits like mommy or daddy, or both. Projecting our parents unconsciously and automatically onto our lovers, authority figures, bosses, friends, colleagues, or teachers is known as transference. This recreates our early family system and projects the horror of the negative love syndrome into the present time. The result is resistance, conflict, rejecting or being rejected, heartbreak, and loss. As adults, we act like frightened 8-year-olds who would do almost anything to avoid pain, yet resist help. As adults, we do not really have to withdraw or to pretend the pain does not exist, but negative love syndrome causes us to believe that we cannot deal with difficult tasks. We spend our lives avoiding the causes of the problems in our lives, afraid that facing our pain will hurt too much, and hoping that it will somehow just disappear. By modeling that, our parents were incapable of dealing with suffering. However, they misled us. It's not true. Our attachment to negative love programming can be released, and our positive real self is always there. Due to their own childhood programming, our parents did not know how to nourish us and our perfect essences. Their own essences were not nourished by their parents. They were never taught to honor, respect, and love themselves. So how could they give to us what they never had? Had they been able to honor themselves, they would have honored us, and we would have been nourished with love and developed a strong sense of inner security. Negative love can be transcended. Find understanding with no condemnation for our biological parents and our parental surrogates. Find compassion for the childhoods they lived. Find forgiveness for what they did to us and what we did to them. Find total acceptance of them for who and what they were and are. When we are able to truly forgive our parents from the deepest levels of our being, emotionally as well as intellectually, then we can forgive ourselves. Forgiveness breaks our inner need and dependency on the parents of our childhood, allowing us to be free of compulsive negative behaviors, which use and abuse us. While the work of the process does not eradicate a particular behavior, it eliminates the need to act out the behavior compulsively and automatically. We can then choose behavior that is appropriate for us in a given time and situation. And this is what we mean by transcendence, choice that is free from the constraints of our negative love programming. When we come to love ourselves fully, we end the eternal negative chatter in our heads and find inner peace. The work of the Hoffman process can accomplish this, not just intellectually, but emotionally, physically, and spiritually as well. Ultimately, to be free of negative love, we must. It is time to see how this applies to you and your life. If you are willing to be curious and open, you can experience the truth of the myriad of subtle and overt ways you adopted your parents' negative patterns. Before beginning these exercises, however, let's examine a set of defenses that can defeat us before we begin: denial, invalidation, cynicism, and skepticism. Denial is our primary defense that we learn in very early childhood when we deny our parents' negativity, and then later in life we deny our own. We learn invalidation by copying how our parents invalidated themselves or because they invalidated us. Self-invalidation provides the rationale for giving up on ourselves and denying who we really are. The result is that we become skeptical and cynical, believing that we can't be free. As you do these exercises, carefully watch to see if you get stuck in one or more of these big patterns. If you do, reflect on how and from whom you learned them. In order to be free, we have to be completely honest with ourselves. By facing our truth, we can free ourselves from the learned, programmed, behavioral deceptions. We must dare to go through the emotional pain of our childhood and to come out on the other end. It is better to face this pain once and for all than to carry the burden and pain of compulsive negative love programming. No one can or will wave a magic wand over you and make it all go away. As we tell our students, you must do the work of the process. You are your own savior. With guidance and help, you can change yourself. The struggle is short-lived and intense, but the end result is inner freedom. Exercises from the Hoffman Process. Take your time as you do the following exercises. As you begin to work through them, choose to suspend your disbelief and accept what you feel and intuit. In doing the process work, you are asked to be both participant and spectator as you chronicle your memories and feelings. As part of the Hoffman Process, we classify hundreds of adopted behaviors and patterns under cluster headings. The following traits fall under three headings: uncaring, non-supportive, negative attitudes, and negative admonitions. Honestly look and see which items in the list describe your mother or father and put a check in the box next to each trait, attitude, admonition, or statement that applies to them. We will return to this list after another exercise. Uncaring, non-supportive, negative love traits. Non-supportive, uncaring. Dutiful. Cold and unaffectionate. Neglectful and unreliable. Uncommitted to others. Little or no display of feelings. Insensitive, indifferent in relationships. Values things more than people. Stingy, selfish. Disrespectful of spouse, children, others. Oblivious to others. Withholds approval. Ignores positive things people do. Negative attitudes. I don't have time for you. I don't have enough love to go around. I don't care. I am more important than you. I can't handle negative feelings. I can't be bothered. Negative admonitions stated implicitly or explicitly. You are not enough. Feelings aren't important. If you get into trouble, I won't love you. Don't touch me. Don't rely on me. Don't talk to me. Don't show love. Children should be seen and not heard. Don't tell me your problems. You need me. Stay out of sight. Be invisible. Re-experiencing your childhood. Now let's examine the interaction of the entire family. The way your mother and father related to each other, to you, and to your siblings became your way of relating to yourselves and others. Their way of living and loving became your way. Your mother and father's conflicts have become your conflicts. Their faults have become your faults. Their blindness has become your blindness. Your family system is the mode of operation for the behaviors, beliefs, attitudes, and emotions of the negative love syndrome. The following questions can assist us in exploring childhood patterns and in identifying automatic reactions and compulsive behaviors. Hopefully, they will trigger and evoke early memories for you. Current behavior patterns need to be identified and then traced back to their origins in your family system. I invite you to honestly look at the reality of your childhood experiences. Focus your thoughts and allow yourself to recall the scenes, situations, and experiences the questions trigger. It may evoke pain, but it's a necessary stage before healing. Give yourself permission to re-experience the past along with any unhappiness or pain. If you have a problem with recall or trying to visualize what happened, simply do the best you can and accept whatever comes. You may actually want to write down any scenes or incidents that these questions trigger. So take a few deep breaths and allow your body to relax and clear your mind. Allow your mind to drift back to memories of your childhood. Visualize yourself as young as you possibly can. Re-experience what it was like to be you as a child. Did you feel loved and accepted by mother and father? Were you really wanted? Were you abandoned emotionally? Were mommy and daddy there but not there for you? Did they die? Did they divorce? How would you describe yourself as a child? How did others describe you? Obedient? Achiever? Submissive? Sad? Sick? Angry? Rebel? Helper? Were you delinquent? Troublemaker? Bad boy? Problem girl? Dummy? Clown? What were the nonverbal injunctions and behaviors? For example, put a smile on your face, put up a good front, hide your true feelings. Did you get disapproving looks? How open was your family? Did they really communicate with and listen to each other? Were they uptight? How did your family act when they were angry? How was it when you felt anger towards your mom and dad? Did your family shout and scream, or did they stifle anger with a smile? Were mom and dad angry in the same way, or were they poles apart? Allow yourself to recall a specific scene where anger was being exhibited by one or both of your parents. Recall a scene when you were angry with mom or dad. Did you express it? What happened? Re-experience what you felt. Were your parents moody or depressed? Did they talk about it? Did they express and deal with their feelings directly, or was everything hidden, secretive, and ignored? Who was the boss in the family? What happened if you challenged your parents? Did you dare to express yourself? What was communication like in your family? What did they talk about? What were conversations like, if there were any? Who dominated the conversation? Who never spoke up? Were your mom or your dad quiet, withdrawn, polite? Were your parents stingy or extravagant? Did you receive any presents? Did they talk about money? Did they fight about it? Never talk about it? Did they get into trouble financially? What demonstrations of affection were normal in your family? How did family members behave when they touched each other, if they did? Did mom and dad express physical affection for each other by holding hands or hugging? Did your parents love each other and show it? What did your parents do when you or your siblings misbehaved? How were you punished? Were you disciplined by lectures, or were you punished cruelly, hit, beaten, or abused? Who punished you? And how did you escape punishment? Did you come home to an empty house? Was mom afraid of dad, or was dad afraid of mom? Were you afraid of one of them or both of them? Were you afraid of your sister or brother? Did you terrorize your sisters, your brothers? Did you like your family? Was it fun, loving, and joyful? Or was it depressing, lonely, and empty? What was it like growing up in your family? By allowing your memories to begin to surface and honestly answering these questions, you have already gathered a wealth of material. The family scenarios of your childhood created layers of lies, pretenses, negative love patterns, and programs. And finally, go back to the beginning of the list of negative traits, attitudes, and admonitions on pages 19 and 20. Please look at your own life. Ask yourself very honestly how many of these negative traits are in your life, your attitudes, your behaviors, your patterns. Check the boxes in the column marked self. Now you know exactly from whom you learned these negative patterns. This is an experiential connection to the negative love syndrome. Fully recognizing and acknowledging how much we are like our parents is very difficult. It's a level of self-understanding that most people never attempt to achieve. Even when they do, some degree of denial remains, allowing them only to acknowledge the positive qualities of their parents, or else blaming their parents and themselves for the guilt and shame that arises when they act against their own best interests. Outcomes of the Hoffman Process. From time to time, through intensive work on oneself, people actually do recognize how much they are like their parents, but then they feel helpless for not seeing another possible way to be. Through our work with tens of thousands of people over almost 50 years, we have found that true freedom is possible. Your negative love patterns, though learned and adopted, can be unadopted. Your essence, your true reality, is like a brilliant diamond. It has never been lost, only covered and hidden, coated with the dirt and grime of negative parental conditioning. Isn't it time to uncover your true self and allow its brilliance to shine? Love is the flowing, the rendering, and the outpouring of the heart and soul of emotional goodness to yourself and to those around you. Love is the essence of life. Unleashing its power is an astonishing event, a true gift of the light. No one can say what your life will be like or what path you will take. What we can say is that it is hard to get glimpses of life's wonder while you're wearing the blinders of negative love. The Hoffman Process clears your path for a totally fresh experience of your own life. Doors of possibility and opportunity will open in unpredictable ways. The process is a powerful experience regarding the re-education of love. It integrates all four aspects of self: physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual, by untying the emotional knot that links us to the legacy of the negative love syndrome. Self-acceptance, self-forgiveness, recognition of self-worth, and unqualified self-love are the keys to unlocking the power of true love. Once the layers of negative programming are peeled away, you can truly live in the present with freedom, love, and peace. Ultimately, nothing is lacking in any of us. Our positive, integral self is always there and available. You can rediscover your own wonder, perfection, lovability, dignity, and authenticity. Genuine satisfaction and unconditional love are not only possible, they are your inalienable right. Robert Hoffman, 1921-1997. Bob Hoffman, renowned for his intuitive capacities, was a gifted and generous man. He was dedicated to awakening people to the astonishing power of love that dwells within each of us, believing that unconditional love is the birthright of every human being. Hoffman embodied his profound yet elegantly simple theory of the negative love syndrome into a powerful experiential learning modality known as the Hoffman Process. Hoffman's basic insight came to him in 1967. For the next 5 years, he collaborated with psychotherapists and psychiatrists to help individuals on a one-to-one basis. In 1972, he and noted psychiatrist Claudio Naranjo, M.D., began presenting Hoffman's method as a 13-week, 2 evenings-per-week course in a group setting. He called it the Fisher-Hoffman Process in honor of the late Siegfried Fischer, M.D. Over the next 12 years, the Fisher-Hoffman Process gained a reputation for producing deep and lasting results. In 1976, Hoffman authored Getting Divorced from Mother and Dad, published by E.P. Dutton & Company, Inc. It was later republished under the title No One is to Blame, freedom from compulsive, self-defeating behavior. In 1985, Hoffman reformatted his program into an 8-day residential intensive, renamed it the Hoffman Quadrinity Process, and then initiated an 8-year period of inspired development and refinement. Today it is known as the Hoffman Process and is presented in 14 countries to some 5,000 participants each year. The Hoffman Process underwent another rejuvenation in 2013 to become a week-long program. Bob Hoffman retired from teaching the process in 1991, but remained active with the Institute until his death in 1997.